We're going to continue our discussion about God, and we're going to develop the idea of a transcendent God even a little more than we did last week. And we're going to talk about a concept that I find hard to understand in some ways. We're going to talk about the infinite God, and we're going to talk about some of the ways in which he is infinite. Now, I want to set the stage for this. As you were reading through the material that you had on lesson three, one of the things that he mentioned in this discussion has to do with the great dichotomy that we all face. God, who is infinite in mercy, infinite in power, infinite in wisdom, who is not limited in any way, made man. And the question is, if God knows everything that there is to know, did he know that man was going to sin? And the question really revolves around whether or not man has free will. The philosophers have talked about this for thousands of years, and I don't mean to suggest that we're going to come to a conclusion about this subject this morning or this evening, but it is something that we have to think about. And if you discuss God with your friends, most of the time, you're going to, at some point, have to address this dichotomy. Now, this is one of the things that he says in his material that you have before you that is a possible answer to this. He says, God committed himself to respect the integrity of man's free will choices. He thereby placed himself in the position of someone having to react to the actions of man, and someone having to permit things to happen that he does not condone. Thorson remarked, this is why he did not keep sin out of the universe by a display of his power, and why he does not save anyone by force. Though it may seem to deny the infinity of God, really it doesn't. And this is what he says. The limitations placed on God by creation are self-limitations. And there's a big difference between self-limitation and the limitation that's imposed by creation. God is not limited in nature. God is not limited by nature as we are, but he is limited by his choice. He did not have to create all that he did. He did not have to include beings with free will in his creation, but he chose to. So tonight we're going to talk about an infinite God, and we're going to talk about him in the three, the four ways that our author suggests that we need to consider God as infinite. First, let's think about God as unlimited or infinite existence. When you read the statement that God made, when he was asked to give his name, he said, I am that I am. What do you see as the implications of that statement? I am that I am. What is your name? Anybody? Yeah, go ahead, Kelly.
Jesus. He's not a created being. He is the creator. He's always been, always will be. No end, no beginning.
Okay.
It's hard to wrap around a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, please.
There is no other.
Okay. Well, when you say there is no other, what do you
There's
mean?
There's no other God but him.
Okay, no other God. Okay. But of course, we exist as well, but we are not like him. That was the whole notion of transcendence. Anybody else? What do you see when God says, I am that I am? Yeah.
Well, the opposite of it is, I am until I'm not. So he's infinite, he's eternal, he continues. And we look at life entirely differently as he does.
Okay. So could any of us say, like God did, I am that I am?
No. Not in the same sense.
Okay. What do you mean?
Well, the word am is in the present tense. He didn't say I was. I am currently, and I will be forevermore. He didn't say that. He just needed to say, I am, because there's no beginning and an end. We can't say it in that sense. We have beginning and end. But I can say, I am right now. And hopefully, I am not what I was yesterday, and I am not what I will be tomorrow. So it's a different kind of I am. So I can't say I am that I am like God can.
Okay.
God is, I mean, he can say that at any point. Well, time is irrelevant to him, but he can say that at any time in our continuum of time. He can
okay.
say I am, and it is consistent and true.
Okay. So it implies consistency. That's certainly true. How do you relate it to Descartes' statement, I think, therefore I am? Yeah.
A.M. is in the morning. He was there in the beginning.
Okay. That's true. Does God ever think in terms of tenses?
No.
I used to be, I am now, and I will be. Yeah, Carol?
Well, yes, you know, I think, therefore I am. But there are some people who don't really think and don't really have that kind of option that is given to them, and yet they are. And so his conclusion comes to the wrong place. It comes to the wrong conclusion.
Well, I think Descartes said, I think, therefore I am, but at the same time recognized, if I can't think, do I cease to exist? God never faces that. And God never talks about tenses. There's an interesting exchange when Jesus is instituting the supper with his disciples. And he makes the statement to them, take, eat. This is my body, which is sacrificed for you. Had he made its sacrifice at that point? No. But Jesus talks about the future as if the future is the past. There is no tense in terms of time with God. He simply is. And that's a little bit hard for us to comprehend, that he just simply is. And we'll talk a little bit more about time in just a minute, but God is self-existent. He did not create himself. He just is. And we can talk about things that can create themselves. We can kind of envision that. But when we think about things that create themselves, we're really thinking about not creation, but things that are capable of manufacturing themselves. And the difference between creation and manufacturing is creation is starting from nothing. Manufacturing is starting with the stuff that's already here and then just reorganizing the stuff. That's manufacturing. Creating is making the stuff that you use to manufacture. So God is self-existent. Comment, Dean? Nope. Just scratching. Okay. Anybody at home? And God is self-sufficient. His existence depends upon nothing. My existence depends upon certain things happening. You know, I have to take in air. I have to take in food. My brain has to think. If we're back to Descartes, God is self-sufficient. He is because he is, not because of anything else. I was listening to the radio this afternoon, and there was a talk show that they're talking about. Graceland is about to be sold in a foreclosure hearing because it is no longer bringing in the kind of money that was used to finance some things. And so they're probably going to. Does everybody know what Graceland is? Right? Okay. And it was really interesting because the person that was doing the talk show was talking to somebody who was 34 years old. He said, "What's Graceland?" Graceland owes its existence to us knowing what it is. You know, it's the second most visited house in the United States.
Yeah.
Or at least it was at one time. I don't know if it still is. It may not be now, because people have forgotten about Elvis. Who is here that can tell me who the guys were that were in the Rat Pack?
Frank Sinatra.
Okay, Eileen.
Well, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Peter Lougher, and can't remember the
name.
Dean Martin.
Martin.
Yes. Okay. What, Mandy?
Oh, I could have told you that.
Your music was
there.
How many can tell me who the original Beatles were?
I don't know the drummer's name. I just know there was a drummer who didn't make the break.
Oh, the first
one. The first one.
If you yeah, the original. Right. And he got kicked out.
I lived during that time. I couldn't tell you then. Couldn't care less.
Well, it's because they had long hair.
Amen.
Had more hair than me.
God is self-sufficient. If we stop thinking about who God is, it will not diminish him at all. Yeah, Mandy.
When you look at the comparison between Descartes' statement, "I think, therefore I am," that allows speculation and doubt.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop thinking, if you stop recognizing, you lose that credibility as who he is. Where God there is no statement, there's no room for doubt, there's no implications of insufficiency in completion. And I think that's the biggest difference, because that speaks to self-sufficiency, that speaks to self-existence. There's no room for doubt. That statement is complete.
Yes. Yes. Now, it is true that it's possible for people to forget about God, to put him out of their knowledge. That's Romans 1, okay? Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things that are not convenient. So yes, we can attempt to eliminate God from our knowledge, but that doesn't diminish God. It only diminishes us. So God is an ultimate existence. He is an unlimited existence who is self-existent and does not need anything else in order to exist. God is unaffected or infinite, unlimited, with regard to time. Time is a part of God's created reality. Let that sink in for a minute. Before God created, there was no time. There was no before and after. The concept of time begins in Genesis 1, morning and evening. That's time. But with God, there is no such thing as time. God created the reality. He transcends the reality. He's outside of it. It's not as if God lives a long time. I mean, Methuselah lived a long time, right? 969 years. It's not like God lives longer than anybody else. God has no concept of time. There's no before and after. And that also means that there's no cause and effect. As far as God is concerned, there's no such thing as a sufficient cause. And let that sink in for a minute, and your mind will start swimming around trying to figure out what that means. But there is no before and after. That's why it's such a kind of a pointless exercise for us to look at the way the end of time is described. Then comes the end, and the dead in Christ will rise first, and then they that are alive shall be caught up together to meet them in the air. And we in our minds have a timeline. This happens, then this happens, then this happens. With God, there's no timeline. That's why the Bible is so confusing when you start trying to build the timeline. Because the Bible is written from God's perspective. So don't try to build a timeline. It can't be done. Once time is destroyed, there's no before and after. There just is. So he is qualitatively outside of time. He's infinite. About whom is the statement made that he was without beginning, without end? Melchizedek. Yeah, Melchizedek, priest of God, who is without beginning, without end, without father, without mother. He lived a long time. But the fact that it says he is without beginning and without end presupposes that the notion of beginning and ending exists. And it doesn't exist with God. God is outside of that concept. So qualitatively, he is without beginning, without end. And quantitatively, he is just outside of what we conceive of as time. That's really hard for me to wrap my head around. I'll be honest about it. He's outside of time because everything I know has a before and after. Yeah, Kim.
Well, you're not alone. It's really baffling, but we even sing songs like In His Time. We want to limit God. We think, well, he answers things on his own time. He doesn't operate on our clock. We operate on his. He really doesn't have a clock. But our humanness wants to superimpose that on God. So there are a few things like that we do that kind of just come from our humanness, like singing that song, in his time, and that particular song kind of bothers me for that very reason, because we're trying to kind of put God into a human box, into a physical box.
Yes. You ever thought about the fact that God is outside of time? Well, it's hard for us to imagine God, quite frankly. We could not create a being who is outside of time from within ourselves. You know, a lot of people say that God is the creation of man. That can't be. Man cannot conceive of something that exists outside of time. And we cannot conceive of something that exists outside of space. Right? Two beings can't occupy the same space at the same time. Two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. We think of when you move from here to here, you have to go through this space to get over here. That's not the case with God. Occupied space is a part of created reality. The fact that I think about moving from here to here through this space, that's a part of what was created. But God doesn't do that. And it's not enough to say that God is everywhere. That's just saying he's really big. Yeah, Carol?
That's just sort of the way I was thinking it, is when God says, I am, but he's everywhere. When he's everywhere, every time that we have a time period, he is in every time period. He wasn't in that time period. He is in that time period. And so the I am part and the God is everywhere dovetail together almost to be one, because you can't separate them out, I think.
Yeah, Kim?
Well, to me it gets really confusing, because when John had his vision, it's in very human terms that he saw God sitting on a throne in a throne room in a place beyond us, so in the heavens. So when we think about, when we say, well, you know, like even when we teach the children, you know, we say this is it's God, it's a heavenly place. God lives in heaven. And so that, again, and I wonder if he sent John that vision because of our limitations, and that we needed to visualize God in terms of space. I don't know, because to me that's kind of baffling. Because I think he's unlimited with regard to space. Space is creative reality. But for some reason, he sent that vision to John, and John had a vision that he was in a space of some type. Even if it was a spiritual space, which it seems to be. And then he also saw Jesus sitting at the right hand of God. This is a really hard concept for me. I don't know how to plug that in to that.
Okay. Ron, you had a comment? Nope.
Job. God told Job to look around.
Yeah.
We have evidence in Isaiah. God told him, look around you. Who created these things? God sits upon the circle of the earth, which to me tells me it's round. Still got flat earth people. But that's God's evidence that he's physically, what he's done physically. Just look around you, you can see the evidence. He's always been there, always has been, always will be. The I am is infinite.
Right. Yeah, Carol?
Well, I think with Kim that she's right that we as humans need to be able to see the authority of the person who's in charge, like the king and his court and whatever, that you have God and Jesus, and God has been, we've been told, he can't be contained in the temple. He can't be contained in the house of meeting. So you just have to look at what's he trying to do with this kind of vision. And I think he was doing the authority and the end of time, and that you can depend on God sort of situation, rather than a room, which is the way the idea is conveyed, which I think is what you were thinking.
I agree with that. I just find it fascinating that he chose to give John a vision that had some physical space parameters to it. And I guess, I mean, my takeaway from that, and I don't know if I'm right or not, is he did that for our benefit. Because we needed to recognize his place. We needed to recognize him sitting on a throne and in a throne room. But I find it fascinating that God was willing to, it doesn't sound, I mean, this sounds secret. God was willing to sort of limit himself to that space. And I don't mean by limitless. Limit's not the right word. To identify with a space like that for our benefit. It's almost like he's humbling himself in a way. Okay, I'm going to talk in terms you can understand. I don't know. I really don't. I'm just baffled by it.
Yeah, Bill?
In the instance of Stephen, said his face appeared as an angel. He was obviously somebody that was a special servant to God. He gave him a vision in advance to reward him for the death that he was about to face.
Perhaps that's an interesting take on why he had the vision. He doesn't say that, but it's an interesting take. Okay. Now, let's think about how all of this comes together. God is infinite in terms of time. He's infinite in terms of existence. He's infinite in terms of space. And with God, there is no cause and effect. Because that presupposes the notion of before and after. It just, with God, it just is. So, if knowledge is a function of space and time, and that's typically the way that we view knowledge. Knowledge is the accumulated evidence that we have that this existed before that. And so we tend to call that causation. If knowledge is our ability to gather evidence about space and time, then we can't understand the knowledge that God has. So in a sense, it's counterproductive to ask the question, did God know that we would sin? Or did God cause man to sin? Or even does man have free will so that he could choose to sin? The first thing that we have to say about that, that I would have to say about that, is God, because he has infinite wisdom, can choose to limit himself. He's the only being that can do that. He can choose his limit. And if he chooses not to know, that's very different than saying he can't know or he doesn't know. And even if he chooses not to know, he still knows. So it's an incredible dichotomy that exists between God and finite man. And that's why we have such a hard time conceptualizing God.
Dean?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
God knew that would happen, but he gave them the opportunity to choose between the devil and himself. And he had knowledge of that, knew what they were going to do, but he gave them the opportunity just the same to choose on their own. We do too. We can choose be sinful or spiritual minded. So it's a choice. And he knew that which one they would make, but he still gave them the opportunity. Eve could have said, no, we're not supposed to, and stuck to it, but she didn't. So she was deceived.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, Carol?
With knowledge, we basically, as humans, we learn. I mean, if you look at all these videos that they have of a little child the first time they have a cake and they shove it all in their mouth and their eyes get all big or they eat a pickle or whatever. It's a learned situation. We go through our whole life learning to gain knowledge. And sometimes we gain the right perspective and sometimes we gain the wrong perspective and sometimes we don't know anything that's going on. But God knows everything. And he doesn't have to learn, oh, well, let's see what will happen here, like scientists where they put the fruit fly in this and they do this experiment to try and figure out whether or not. God doesn't have to do that. God already knows. And so the way we learn is so different than God. And if you go back to the garden, the tree was the knowledge of good and evil. Adam and Eve had the knowledge of God, had the knowledge of good, what was good. The only thing they learned by that tree was what evil was and how alluring it was, I guess, because they blew it, don't we all?
And he gave us a choice.
Right. He gave us a choice. Does that mean he didn't know how we were going to choose? The two things are not related. Because God can know and choose not to know at the same time. So if he chooses not to know, he still knows. I know.
Okay, can I really monkey it up?
I know.
I can monkey this up even more. What really baffles me is we know that, and we learn that God tempts no man. Temptation does not come from God. Yet, where did the deceiver come from? Who embodied the serpent? The serpent was a good creation. It was an animal created, but then the deceiver came along. Well, where did the, if God created everything, did he create evil? And if he did he send that evil, that deceiver, as a temptation? So it gets really, it gets kind of messy in my mind, because the deceiver just, I don't know, did God create evil? And so those are the kinds of things that I struggle with, which, because it gets back to this whole concept of God, because I don't think that God tempted Eve and Adam. I don't think God did that.
Dean?
Allowed a deceiver to do it, but where did the deceiver come from? God created the deceiver.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
We know that Satan was cast down because he, there, at least I think I know this by history, but the reason he was called a serpent, I think, was just what he was, but he always existed, and that was his realm. And God said, because of that, you will be on your belly all the time, made a serpent of him, so to speak. But he always existed. As I understand, he was an angel and he was cast out of heaven for whatever he did. So
that's what a lot of people have concluded. I'm not one that concludes that, but
I'm not positive, but that's how I understand it.
Yeah, and a lot of people do. I beheld Satan cast down. The prince of this world was cast down.
Well, when Job was first tested, in verse 6 of chapter 1, it says, one day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. At this time now he has a proper name, Satan. And this is probably one of the oldest books written, oldest events recorded. And the Lord said to Satan, where do you come from? And Satan answered, from roaming through the earth and going back and forth in it. So I think that's the Lord, the same way he questioned Job. Who do you think you are? Who created you? I think he was asking Satan the same thing. Who do you think you are? Where did you come from? You came from me, by the way. I just that whole concept of Satan and evil and the deceiver, and how all of that comes to be, because without that, the plan of salvation wouldn't be necessary. We would still be in the garden with Adam and Eve. There would be no sin.
Okay.
It makes my brain hurt.
Yeah.
Well, it seems that the angels had a choice, just like we do.
whether they want to obey God or not.
Yeah, the angels have choice.
Just like we do.
That exists in a spiritual realm that I'm not sure I understand a whole lot better than I understand God. The angels are not eternal. Angels are created beings. I think that's pretty clear. I'm not sure I understand everything about angels, but angels have choices like we do. They just don't marry. Okay. One more thought. God is unlimited in power. And we talked a little bit about this last week when we talked about a transcendent God. And I think we need to develop the idea of absolute and ordained power. God gave a great deal of power to some of his creation, some of his created beings. I think Satan is one who has been given by God a great deal of power. We're familiar with Romans 13. He gave us governments. He ordained governments. There is no power except it comes from God. That's ordained power. God's power, on the other hand, is absolute.
Oh.
He is the only one who can give power. Nobody gives power to God. Yeah.
I think that's where you get into the biggest stumbling block for most people, and because, well, if God's so powerful, why did he, you know, let my wife die? Why did he let the hurricane come and destroy my house? And you just said he answered your prayers. Why does he answer your prayers and not my prayers? I mean, this is the one place where it is so difficult to say, and the other thing, God will do it in his time. It may not be now, but it may be later. It's like, why does God choose to do this and not that? I mean, because we have the free choice, and sometimes those things that happen to us are created by our free choice, and sometimes they're not.
Well, sometimes it's important, I think, for us to understand that with God, it's not a zero-sum game. With us, doing things is a zero-sum game. If I decide to do this, that means I can't do that. With God, it doesn't work that way.
There's another thing that we forget, too, because nature is nature, and it's appointed man wants to die. And so that's just a natural thing. That's not God choosing to take something away from you. That's a natural process.
And oh, yeah, it is.
Thank God.
Death exists because man sinned in the garden.
Right.
It did not exist prior to that time.
But so, he has to pick and choose whose prayer he's going to answer. He answers it, but he may not answer it how you prayed, because it's not his will. It's not. He answered it all right. He heard it, but it's not meant to be. So it's a little bit hard to, well, it's not hard for me, but it might be for somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to realize that with God doing something, there is no sense in which opportunity cost arises with God. With us, with all men, there's this concept called opportunity cost. If I decide to do this, that means I can't do that. So the cost of doing this is giving up that. That doesn't exist with God. It's not even possible that that exists with God. Yeah.
And that cost may not be a decision that you made. It may be the decision that society says that it's okay to drive drunk and your child is killed or your husband is killed by a drunk driver. It's a cause and relationship thing, but it's not that you caused it. It's that somebody else's free will caused it. God didn't bring that to you as a test. He will protect you from that other person's decision as much as he possibly can to help you down the road. But he's not going to stop their bad decision from affecting your life, like the waves coming on the ocean.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that kind of thinking so much. And here's what disturbs me about it. Preacher John was on his way to church. A drunk driver ran a stop sign, hit his car, and killed his wife. When she died, her heart was transplanted into an 18-year-old. Whose parents had been praying fervently that a heart would become available for their son. Don't think about that in terms of cause and effect. It's not as if there's a zero sum to this. God took Preacher John's wife so that he could give the heart to the 18-year-old teen boy.
But that's what I said, is God makes the best of the situation. In other words, when she died, then the heart became available so that he could answer this person's prayer. Okay. Or maybe somebody who wasn't even praying for that. But he makes the best out of any situation. He makes our way right. So we step wrong or somebody shoves us in the wrong direction. He helps us get back. He's always in the positive. And that's the thing that's really, as you said, God forgets. He knows, but he can forget. But when he forgives our sins, as far away as east is from west, I mean, it's inconceivable that somebody could forget my sin and move it that far away and not hold it against me.
Okay. Yeah, Kim, you had a comment?
No.
Okay. Well, when we start talking about God, it gets complicated. And we don't need to deceive ourselves and think that it's not going to get complicated and there are some things that we're not going to be able to understand. And it's just going to be different. God is transcendent. He's not just the biggest one of us with our limitations, but he's bigger than we are. So he has more power. He occupies more space so that he's everywhere. That just doesn't apply to God. You can't think about God in that way. It's not like God is Superman. He's not man. He's other than man. And so we always have to keep that in our minds. Okay. Thank you for your participation. I know it's a difficult subject to get your head around, but it's something that we have to think about, and it's something we have to begin to appreciate. And when we do that, we become better servants of God.